If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
She had broken the ultimate girl code, if you like, and she had dared to wed the Queen's favourite. And if anybody had known, you know, what had gone on between Elizabeth and Dudley, maybe it was Lettice. Maybe that added an extra sting.
That was Nicola Tallis discussing a Tudor love triangle.
Listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. In today's episode, we'll be finding out about a story of love and betrayal that caused great tensions in the Tudor court. Robert Dudley was the long-standing favourite of Elizabeth I, but in 1578 he married the noblewoman Lettice Knowles, sparking the Virgin Queen's fury. These events are explored by the historical author Nicola Tallis in her most recent book, and she met up with our website assistant Rachel Dinning at our History Weekend event last autumn.
I'm here at the York History Weekend with Nicola Tallis, who has been talking about Lady Jane Grey. But what she's going to talk to us about today is actually her latest book, Elizabeth's Rival, which came out recently. Why did you want to write this book?
It was something that really intrigued me because I was visiting St Mary's Church in Warwick in September 2015, looking for something for my first book on Lady Jane Grey, and whilst I was there, I was admiring this wonderful double tomb of Lettice Knowles and her second husband, Robert Dudley, and it really struck me then that I didn't know very much about this woman, and I thought, when I get a moment, I'm going to go and find out more. And I did, and I was really shocked to find that nobody had ever written a biography of her. So for me, that was the perfect opportunity to put that right.
And you sort of describe her in your latest book as Elizabeth's rival, her love rival.
Yeah.
And as you just said, I mean, no one's done this before. The Tudor period's a really popular area of history. Why do you think no one has covered Lettice Knowles?
I have got no idea, because there is so much material available, and I think it's just because she's a bit of an unknown entity. The number of people who I've told that I've been working on Lettice Knowles and they've just looked at me blankly, because people just don't have any idea who she is. They don't realise how closely associated with Elizabeth she was, not just, as you say, because they were love rivals, but also because they were tied by blood as well. And I think that she's just overlooked because there's so much focus on Elizabeth and more focus on Elizabeth's relationship with Robert Dudley that Lettice has kind of just been sidelined.
And you mentioned briefly that she's tied to Elizabeth by blood. So what exact relation is she to Elizabeth?
Okay, this is a very difficult one to pinpoint exactly. So Lettice's mother, Catherine Knowles, I am convinced was the result of her mother, Mary Boleyn's, affair with Henry VIII. So if that is true, it means that Lettice was an illegitimate granddaughter of Henry VIII, and Elizabeth, therefore, would have been Lettice's aunt. So they were certainly cousins because Lettice's grandmother, Mary Boleyn, was, of course, sister of Elizabeth's mother, Anne Boleyn, but I think that they were actually more closely related than any of them could openly admit to.
Let's explore Lettice a bit. What do we know about her, and how did you go about finding this information that you've uncovered about her?
She was a really interesting figure. There's not a lot we can say about her in her youth, which is not unusual for men or women of this period. But she really comes to the fore when Elizabeth I succeeds at the end of 1558. And she is immediately appointed to join the Queen's household as one of her ladies. And she was described as being one of Elizabeth's favourites. So for the first year or so of Elizabeth's reign, she was one of the leading ladies of Elizabeth's court. Elizabeth, of course, was the queen bee, and her ladies were expected to fall into the background. But she was given, Lettice was given a favoured position by her, and a privileged access to the queen as well, because these positions as the queen's ladies were highly sought after. So that's a real mark of Lettice's favour, that she was allowed that close proximity to Elizabeth. And we also know she was described as one of the best-looking ladies of the court. So something that really struck me was how closely she resembles Elizabeth in looks. And you can really see that if you look at their portraits of one another, although Lettice was 10 years younger than Elizabeth. So given her looks, it's no wonder that she attracts a suitor within a short space of time. And his name was Walter Devereux, Viscount Hereford. And we don't know anything about their courtship, but we do know that they had resolved to marry. This probably took place in 1561. And at that time, Lettice retired from the court and took up residence at her husband's Staffordshire home, Chartley. And she remained there for the next few years, fulfilling her wifely duties, chiefly providing her husband with an heir. And she and Walter had 5 children, 4 of whom survived infancy, 2 sons and 2 daughters. But it didn't stop her from returning to the court on occasion, because she was still very young. The court still held a great deal of appeal to her. And it was on one of these visits to court that her name became linked with that of another man. And that, of course, was Robert Dudley.
Right, yes. And just before we go on to Robert Dudley, I wanted to briefly ask about her first marriage, because Elizabeth was quite known, wasn't she, for hating it when her ladies got married. She would get intensely and jealous, particularly if they hadn't told her. So what did she react to this first marriage? Do we know how she reacted? And obviously Lettice took herself away from court for some time. Do we know how this went down with Elizabeth?
There's, unfortunately and frustratingly, there isn't any surviving evidence. As you say, Elizabeth wasn't particularly fond of her ladies marrying, because she expected to be the centre of their world. And we know that it put a huge strain on Lettice's parents, for example. And it's so much so that Lettice's father once dramatically claimed that he was prepared to quit his life at court for a quiet life in the country just because it was too much. But in Lettice's case, there's actually no evidence to show that she disapproved of Lettice's marriage to Walter Devereux, and we can only assume that she gave it her approval. We do know that she didn't always oppose marriages. It was more often than not if she didn't perceive any advantage in it to her ladies. And in Lettice's instance, she and Walter were very well matched because Walter was possessed of ancient and noble lineage, and Lettice and her family have a very good relationship with the Queen. So they're really, it's a really suitable match on both sides.
Okay, great. One other thing that I was curious about was, what would Lettice's role have been at court? What sort of things would she have been doing?
So she would have been responsible for making conversation with the Queen, for helping her with her makeup, for dressing her hair, helping her dress with these numerous costly garments. Elizabeth's well known for her love of clothes and finery, helping her to wash, but also participating in court entertainments, so the masks and the dances that were a frequent occurrence at Elizabeth's court. All of these things Lettice would have been expected to participate in also.
So it was a very intimate relationship with the Queen. She'd have known her very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did she come to know Robert Dudley? What were the origins of their relationship?
Yeah, it's very difficult to know exactly where it started, but their families were friends. So they were both Protestant families. And from the very beginning of Elizabeth's reign, not only are Lettice's family at the forefront of affairs, but so is Robert Dudley and his family. And like Elizabeth, Robert Dudley had endured a turbulent youth, and he'd also been married. And he, of course, was not only one of the Queen's favourites, but also her one-time suitor. And so he was often at court, and we don't know exactly how well he would have come to know Lettice during this time, but he was certainly a friend of her father, Francis Knowles. But it's in 1565 that their names come to be linked to each other for the first time. And by that time, Robert Dudley's first wife had died in mysterious circumstances, and he was busy trying to press his suit for the Queen's hand. But Elizabeth had really kept him at arm's length and not given him a definitive answer either way. And so in 1565, Robert Dudley had come up with a way to try and force an answer out of her. And at that time, Lettice had travelled to London to attend the wedding of her elder brother, Henry. And it's at this time that the imperial ambassador reported that Robert Dudley was busy flirting with her and showing her attention. That's the phrase that he uses. And that she's a favourite of that Lettice was a favourite of the Queen at this time, and that is exactly why Robert Dudley had chosen her to antagonise Elizabeth. And we don't know exactly how Lettice responded to his attentions, but given that she was pregnant at this time with her third child, it's unlikely that anything happened then. But Elizabeth flew into a jealous rage and hated the fact that Dudley was showing Lettice all of this attention. And their names aren't mentioned or aren't linked with one another again for more than a decade. So they would have been familiar with one another from court, and whether there was any physical attraction between them, possibly, maybe likely, but nothing developed between them until much later.
Now, Robert Dudley and Elizabeth had a very interesting relationship. So I think maybe we should talk a little bit about that. So how did Robert Dudley come to be in Elizabeth's court? Let's start with that question.
Okay. Now, it's very difficult to pinpoint, again, exactly when Robert Dudley and Elizabeth came to know one another. They'd certainly known each other during their youths, and I think the fact that they both had this turbulent past sort of cemented the bonds of friendship between them, if you like. But Elizabeth had always known that Robert Dudley had been married to Amy Robsart in 1550, but they had always been very, very close. And there's a later report which talks about the fact that Dudley had lent Elizabeth money when she was in trouble in her youth also. But from the very beginning of Elizabeth's reign, Dudley is promoted and at the forefront of everything. And just a couple of months after Elizabeth's succession, it was reported that she was in love with him. And their relationship, of course, drew gossip, scandalous gossip, and she continuously risked her reputation on his behalf because there were these reports about how he'd been visiting her chambers late at night when nobody else was present. And then, of course, when Amy Robsart is found dead at the bottom of the staircase, September 1560, it does damage Dudley's reputation because it was believed by some that he had murdered her. And it kind of, that really ended any possibility of a romantic relationship between him and Elizabeth, which was perhaps what was intended, because there was no question of her being able to marry him then.
So the death of Robert's wife, Amy, so the circumstances around this was sort of at the height of the gossip about Elizabeth and Dudley.
Yeah.
And then she fell down the stairs and broke her neck?
Yeah.
Is that right?
She fell down or was pushed.
Or was pushed, exactly. Yeah. I mean, this seems very suspicious and a sort of convenient time. So
yeah.
What do you think? Do you think that she... What do you think happened there?
It's such a difficult one to pinpoint. I certainly don't think that Robert Dudley was responsible in any way, shape or form. We know that Amy was unwell, but I think that she was actually murdered on William Cecil, Lord Burghley's orders, because we know that he was extremely worried about how close Robert Dudley was getting to the Queen and was really worried about the possibility of them marrying. And so I think he realised that if Amy died and died in a manner where it looked like she'd been murdered, then that would quash any claim that he had to marry Elizabeth.
We don't always realise just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger. Talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/historyextra.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hola.
Hello. This call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow. Ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow. Now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
So I certainly think that he's a strong contender.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, it worked in that sense. Elizabeth very much withdrew from Robert Dudley after this point in time. I mean, do you think that she would have married him in any other circumstances? Why? I mean, if she did have these strong feelings for him, which we can't know for definite, you know, why didn't she marry him?
I think Elizabeth, I don't think she ever would have married him, ultimately. I think she makes this declaration very soon after her succession that she's married to her country and that she will never marry any man. And we see throughout the course of her reign, there are times when she wavers and it looks like actually she's going to marry Dudley at one point, Duke of Anjou at another point, but ultimately she always gets cold feet. And I think that she'd had first-hand experience with not only the way in which her mother had met her brutal end, but she's also seen how numerous of her other stepmothers, you know, Jane Seymour died as a result of childbirth, her father discards Anne of Cleves, and then Catherine Howard is also executed. She's got all these examples of how royal marriage could go wrong before her, and I think that it left permanent scars. And so I think really her resolution at the beginning of her reign that she wasn't going to marry is a true reflection of her intentions.
So even without Robert's wife being killed in these, well, dying in this horrible way, you don't think that she would actually have pursued a relationship anyway?
No. I do think that she was in love with him and that she cared very greatly for him, but I think the idea of a marriage was something very different and it wasn't a step that she was prepared to take.
So going forward a few years and Dudley and Lettice, so how does she react when she starts to learn of perhaps a flirtatious relationship between these two?
The first time that Lettice and Dudley's names are mentioned in collusion with one another is 1565, and Elizabeth was completely outraged. And we're told that she upbraided him in very bitter terms, although we don't have any record of if she did have words with Lettice also. But then their names aren't linked with one another for more than a decade. And the next time that we hear of Elizabeth's reaction is when she learns that the two have secretly married, and she didn't react well at all, to put it mildly.
Okay, then what happened?
In September 1578, Leicester, as he was then, Robert Dudley being created Earl of Leicester, Leicester and Lettice undergo a secret wedding. And a secret wedding was the only option because they both knew full well that the Queen would never give them her royal consent to marry. By this time, Lettice's first husband, Walter Devereux, was dead, and she and Leicester had struck up a romantic relationship that soon became very serious. And before long, they were in love and had resolved to marry. And for Leicester, this is a big step for him because he'd given up on the idea of wedding Elizabeth by this point. And for many years, one contemporary reported that he'd forborne marriage in all other respects elsewhere, because he didn't want to earn Elizabeth's enmity. But so strong were his feelings for Lettice that they did undergo this secret marriage ceremony. And it was a very badly kept secret from the start. And within a matter of weeks, there were whispers at court of what had gone on. But nobody dared tell the Queen at this time. But it was probably in July 1579, 10 months after the marriage had taken place, that Elizabeth was dealt this blow, and we know she was utterly crushed by it. And she was so outraged that her initial reaction was to have Leicester sent to the Tower, but she was dissuaded from doing so. But he was nevertheless told to absent himself from court and was sent to his house at Kew to lie low. And the majority of her anger, the Queen's anger, was reserved for Lettice. And, you know, why is this? Maybe because she's a woman, perhaps because she's also 10 years younger and very beautiful, which adds a further element of resentment to the situation. But at some point, this bitter confrontation between the two women took place within the Queen's apartments at the Palace of Whitehall. And we're told that Elizabeth, in no uncertain terms, told Lettice that she would have but one queen in England, and boxed her ears and forbade her from the court. And so Lettice was banished and basically told to retire into a life of obscurity. The Queen was absolutely outraged. For Leicester, he was very quickly restored to favour. Elizabeth couldn't bear the thought of losing him from her life altogether. But Lettice was not.
So did Lettice sort of live the rest of her life in a very quiet life away from the court? What was the ultimate ending of this tale?
Well, in some ways she did. She retired from court and she did content herself with domestic matters for some time. So she gave birth to a son with Robert Dudley, named Robert after his father. But sadly, he died when he was 3 years old. And from then on, all of Lettice's hopes for advancement and glory were invested in her children from her first marriage. And her son, also Robert, Earl of Essex, quickly became a favourite with the Queen. But during this time, she is living this peaceful domestic existence, running Leicester's household and so on. But Elizabeth was still furious with her. And we know that during this time, she continued to insult her. So on one occasion, Elizabeth called Lettice a she-wolf. And when Leicester departed for the Netherlands in late 1585 to lead the Queen's forces against the Spanish, there were these malicious reports that Lettice was planning on going as well. And Elizabeth was furious and made it clear that that was no way going to happen. And Lettice's representatives had to sort of pacify her and say, it's fine, she's not going anywhere. When Leicester died in 1588, even that didn't serve to heal the breach between the two women. Lettice, even though she had, you know, she hadn't been reconciled to the Queen, she hadn't given up hope, and she decided to give it one more throw of the dice. And by now, her son, the Earl of Essex, was very much the Queen's new favourite since Leicester's death. And it was through him that she saw her means of being restored to favour. And gradually, eventually, Essex manages to convince the Queen to meet with his mother. And so Lettice travelled from the countryside in Staffordshire, where she'd been living, to court. In the height of winter, she was that desperate to be reconciled with the Queen. And at the last minute, Elizabeth cancelled the meeting and refused to meet her. So she completely humiliated her. There was Lettice arrived at court in all her finery, and it was a snub that was humiliatingly public. But she was determined not to give up. And Essex nagged the Queen to meet with her, and eventually she did. And after 20 years apart from one another, the two women came face to face. And who knows what they felt as they looked at each other at that time. But Lettice had good reason to hope that she had been forgiven, because it was reported that the Queen had embraced her and allowed Lettice to kiss her hand. But unfortunately for Lettice, it was all a superficial show. And just a few days later, Elizabeth was reported to be insulting her once more. And unbeknown to Lettice, they would never meet again.
That's fascinating that this grudge was held for such a long time. Yeah. So how long this meeting, how long after Dudley's death was this, roughly?
So this took place almost a decade after Dudley's death.
So even a death, you know, they've been married for years, he's passed away, Elizabeth still feels so intensely strongly about this woman who, at the very start of her, you know, they had a good relationship in the past, and
yeah,
possibly even she was sister with her, the sister of her mother. It's kind of, yeah, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
You touched on it briefly, but I'll ask again. Why do you think she was so intensely against Lettice, but so, you know, welcoming of Dudley after an initial putting him in the Tower of London? Why do you think that was?
I think it's partly because Lettice was a woman, and Elizabeth generally throughout her life seems to have closer relationships with men and seem to associate more with men. And I think that the bonds that she had with Robert Dudley were ultimately stronger than those that she had with Lettice. They had been through so much together. And I think that she just couldn't bear to lose him altogether. Whereas Lettice, you know, she had broken the ultimate girl code, if you like, and she had dared to wed the Queen's favourite. And if anybody had known, you know, what had gone on between Elizabeth and Dudley, maybe it was Lettice. Maybe that added an extra sting.
Ah, okay. And do we think that Dudley had a genuine affection for Lettice? It was a love match.
Yeah, I definitely think it was a love match, because I don't think anything else would have persuaded him to risk losing Elizabeth's favour unless he had been very much in love. And unfortunately, none of his letters to Lettice survive and none of hers to him survive. But he did refer to her in his will as his loving wife. When their son sadly passed away, although Lettice was by his side at the time, Dudley was at court, and he hurried from court to be by Lettice's side. And, you know, they really stuck together and comforted each other through this time. And he referred to the fact that he'd been there comforting his poor, sorrowful wife who was badly handled by the Queen. So I do think that there was a definite real love there.
You sort of said that there's no surviving letters between her and Dudley. So whilst you were writing your latest book, what was the sort of evidence that you were looking at?
Yeah, so even though none of her letters to Dudley survive, or to her first husband, there are actually quite a number of her other letters which survive. And many of these were written to her son, the Earl of Essex. And those were a brilliant source of information. And motherhood was really Lettice's calling in life. And if you read her letters, it tells you a great deal about her and her approach to motherhood. And you can see from this that she was a really protective and sometimes stifling mother who was constantly pestering her son and, you know, calling him up on the fact that he didn't come to see her enough, he didn't write to her enough, that he didn't do enough for her. And but on the other hand, she always referred to him as her most sweet and noble child. And she always signed herself something along the lines of, "Your mother infinitely loving you." So her letters, those that survive, were a brilliant source. And equally, three of her letters survived to Lord Burghley, all about financial matters after the death of her first husband. And you can see from this what a determined character she was, because she was constantly, doggedly pursuing him in what she believed to be her rights. So that was a brilliant source.
One thing I was actually really curious about, and this is slightly off topic, but Lettice's name, was this a common name in the Tudor period? Because we don't have it now. Well, we possibly
no.
do, but do you know if this was a common name?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a common name, although it did become more common, because Lettice herself, she had, I think, four nieces who were also called Lettice, and she had various granddaughters who were also called Lettice. And yeah, you know, that's not unusual. But she was named as a compliment to her paternal grandmother, Lettice Penniston, and it was a shortened form of Letitia, which was the Latin word for happiness.
Oh, that's interesting. So Lettice herself, I mean, she lived an extraordinarily long time, didn't she?
Yeah.
Tell me about the end of her life.
So she lived to the extraordinary age of 91, which, that's old now, but it was almost unheard of in the 16th century. She lived through the reigns of seven monarchs, including Lady Jane Grey, and two dynasties, the Tudors and the Stuarts. And in 1632, which was 2 years before her death, she was still reported to be in such good health that she could walk for a mile a day. But by 1634, her health had rapidly deteriorated, and we don't unfortunately know what the nature of her final illness was, but it was on Christmas Day 1634 that she died at Drayton Bassett, which was her home in Staffordshire.
Actually, I was wondering, she got married again, didn't she, after Dudley's death, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, what was the circumstances of her third marriage? Who was it to? And would you like to tell me about that?
Yeah, of course. So we don't know exactly how it all came about, but after Dudley's death, Lettice was the executor of his will, and Dudley had died hugely in debt. He himself didn't even realise how much money he owed, but it was a lot, millions, modern day equivalent of millions. And Lettice was responsible for paying all of these debts. And I think it was perhaps because she wanted some assistance with her financial affairs that she felt that she needed a male protector. And so just 10 months after Dudley had died, she married again in July 1589 to Sir Christopher Blount, who was a member of Dudley's household. But he was a very unusual choice because Lettice and her family were all stringently Protestant, and Christopher Blount came from a notoriously Catholic family. And yeah, he had served in Dudley's household, but it does seem that there was a genuine affection between the pair. And Blount is the only one of Lettice's husbands for whom a letter does survive. And although it's very short, she does refer to herself as being his affectionate and obedient wife. And she also referred to Blount as being her best friend. But we know that not everybody approved of this marriage, because Lettice's son, the Earl of Essex, originally described it as an unhappy choice. But gradually, as time wore on, Blount did prove himself to be a loyal stepfather who won Essex's trust. And we know that he did immediately begin setting about trying to sort out Lettice's financial affairs. He began selling off some of her jewels to pay her creditors. But later on, when Blount falls into hot water, Lettice immediately tried to distance herself from him. And I think by then she'd had enough, and she claimed that he'd sold her jewels and her lands without her consent. So she was very clearly trying to move herself away from him.
Oh, so the marriage actually had a bit of a bitter ending.
It had a very bitter ending, which was dictated by circumstances, because in February 1601, Lettice's son, the Earl of Essex, who'd been gradually falling out of favour with Queen Elizabeth really since 1599, he staged this ill-thought-out rebellion to topple the Queen's government. And Sir Christopher Blount was one of the key conspirators. And we don't know how much Lettice knew about this rebellion, but she certainly knew something. And it all went disastrously wrong. Essex was arrested, so was Christopher Blount, and they were both executed. And Lettice immediately tried to have disassociate herself from Blount.
Yeah, let's talk about the Essex Rebellion, if you'd like to tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it was basically a plot by Essex. It was really rash and really, really stupidly reckless. But he planned to overthrow the Queen's government and install himself as head of the Queen's council, head of the Queen's advisers. And Blount was backing him all the way. But it was really doomed to failure from the outset, and the conspirators were quickly rounded up and put on trial, found guilty. The Earl of Essex was executed first, so Lettice's son was lost to her, and then soon afterwards Blount was executed too. So Lettice's family had been completely shattered.
You have to wonder, and like having learnt that, how what sort of conversations went on in their household, you know, between Lettice and her husband.
Yeah.
I mean, about Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I mean, you've sort of suggested, I think, that Lettice didn't approve of this and was very much, she distanced herself from him, especially after the execution. So yeah. You don't think that she had any sort of ill will towards Elizabeth at this point?
It's so difficult to know. I mean, I don't think she harboured any warm feelings towards Elizabeth, given how the Queen had treated her. But I think a rebellion against the Queen was treason, and that's a completely different kettle of fish. So I don't think... Lettice was very astute, and she was a clever woman, And I think she was well aware that the consequences for treason were fatal, and she wouldn't have wanted to become embroiled in anything like that.
To sort of sum up, what would you say to someone, why should they read a biography of Lettice? Why is her life, to you, so interesting?
There are so many reasons. I think that Lettice and her life really sum up everything that we find interesting about the Tudor period. It's full of tragedy, it's full of ambition, it's got love, heartbreak, intrigue and disgrace. And somebody recently described it as the great Tudor catfight. And I think that that is the perfect way of summarising Elizabeth's rival.
That was Nicola Tallis. Elizabeth's Rival, the tumultuous tale of Lettice Knowles, Countess of Leicester, is out now in the UK and the US, published by Michael O'Mara. And Nicola wrote the cover feature of our December 2017 issue, which is available as a back issue. Meanwhile, our February edition has recently gone on sale and contains pieces about the suffragettes, the Trojan Wars, the Terracotta Warriors and lots more. Look out for it in all good retailers now, plus in our many digital formats. Well, that's about all for today, but please do listen in on Monday, when we're going to air the first of two episodes on women's fight for the vote.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.